From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Governor J.B. Pritzker has been spending a fair amount of time raising his profile beyond Illinois. He's appeared multiple times now on the CBS Sunday Politics show, Face the Nation. He's given speeches to several state Democratic parties across the country. And last week, he launched a national dark money PAC.
This is a pivotal moment for our republic. That's why I'm proud to announce the launch of Think Big America, an organization dedicated to safeguarding reproductive rights and standing up against the right-wing extremists who want to take us backwards. Think Big America is building on the successes we've achieved in Illinois and taking the fight across the nation.
Pritzker has been thinking big, quote unquote, for a while now. That was his campaign slogan back in 2018 when he first ran for governor of Illinois. He won, of course, and then won re-election last year. He's still governor, at least for now, but many people in the world of Illinois politics wonder just how big J.B. Pritzker is thinking. Could he be teeing himself up for a presidential run? Peter Slevin asks that question in a profile of Pritzker published last week by The New Yorker magazine. It's called The Billionaire Hotel Heir and Progressive Hero? Slevin is a contributing writer for The New Yorker. Previously, he spent a decade on the staff of The Washington Post. Nowadays, he's also a professor in the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. And he joins me now. Peter, welcome to The 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
I want to mention I've been looking forward to this conversation. As some of you may know, I was a State House reporter for quite a few years here in Illinois. I covered the Blagojevich, Quinn, Rauner, and Pritzker administrations and campaigns. And I think Peter raises several interesting ideas in his piece. We might have a few points of disagreement as well. So I hope this will be the kind of spirited discussion that happens all the time in the State House press room, but rarely gets aired in public. Listeners, of course, we want to invite you to join us today as ever. There are a lot of strong opinions out there about Governor Pritzker. We asked our texting group about him yesterday. We'll be sharing some of what you've had to say throughout the show. You can join the conversation live by calling 800-222-9455. Has Governor Pritzker changed Illinois politics for better or worse? And do you see him having a future in politics outside Illinois? Again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Peter, I want to spend a bit of time talking about what Pritzker's done in his time in office. I mean, we could run through the list. A few of our listeners actually did just that. Gene in Bloomington sent a text that said, he makes me proud to be from Illinois, where women's reproductive health is protected, book banning is wrong, the pension fund shortfall is finally being addressed, and the incredibly unfair cash bail system is being reformed, and so much more. I mean, Peter, there's a lot we could get into, but broadly speaking, how would you sum up Pritzker's, you know, sort of defining traits as a politician?
So Pritzker is an unlikely warrior when you think about him being a billionaire at least three times over. And he has pitched himself and defined himself as a politician who is moving to the left and trying to deliver results for people he thinks may not be as part of the Democratic base. And he sees his policies as a return to the 60s or even the 30s with social service programs and healthcare and, of course, abortion rights, more money for schools, more money for to go on to higher education. And his argument is that if you deliver stuff that people want, they might just vote for you.
Is he a populist in your view, or a popularist, I guess, is one of the gradations some people on the left make nowadays?
It's so hard to know with labels. I don't think he would define himself as a populist. I think also, given what we've seen from the Republicans, populist is a bit of a dirty word, I think. Mm-hmm. I think he would say he's pragmatic, which I think goes against some notions of what populism is. But to say popularist, to borrow your word, Brian, that seems plausible, right? That he thinks he's doing things that are popular. Of course, a key question is whether A, they're popular, and B, they'll be recognized as such when it comes time, and beyond Illinois, or and certainly in downstate counties, many of them, to decide whether to vote for an actual Democrat.
Yeah, no, and that's something I definitely want to get into a little later. You spent some time in the piece, though, talking about his life experiences and how that might have informed his politics. Can you remind our listeners, for those who may not be intimately familiar with the details of his upbringing, just basically, I mean, obviously, he comes from a family where he's a billionaire heir to a hotel fortune, but he had definitely some tough times in his youth.
He really did. I was intrigued to hear him talk about this so openly. And he has made some of these points in his campaigns in 2018 and in 2022. He was one of three kids born to Donald and Sue Pritzker in Silicon Valley. The family had already made enormous sums of money. His father, though, with his brother, bought a Hyatt hotel in Los Angeles near the airport. And from that one hotel, they built what became the Hyatt Hotel chain. So Pritzker was raised in a political family. His father had political ambitions. His mother was played a role in the California Democratic Party. The likes of Nancy Pelosi would drop by the house at times, at one point licking envelopes with Sue Pritzker, JB's mother. But when JB in 1972 was 7 years old, his father, Donald, went to Hawaii to open a new Hyatt hotel, went out to play tennis, and died of a heart attack at age 39. JB's mother was an alcoholic. This, again, is something that he talks about. Her alcoholism worsened. At her best, she was dynamic and engaged. When she descended into some of the worst bouts of her alcoholism, JB says that as a child, he would stay up late at night waiting for her to fall asleep, maybe for the glass to drop on the floor to make sure that she wasn't smoking in bed. He told me that sometimes it was just so unbearable, he would get on his bike and ride over to one of his mother's friends' houses just to get away. And in 1982, on 10 years after his father died of a heart attack, his mother was out driving her Cadillac in San Francisco. She was drunk. The car broke down. A tow truck came. As the tow truck was driving the car and Sue Pritzker back to the garage, she opened a door, jumped out, and died. At that time, JB was away at boarding school in Massachusetts. He was 17 years old. And he and his sister Penny Pritzker, the former Commerce Secretary in the Obama administration, talk about how the pain, the trauma of those years influenced them, their choices, how they relate to the world. And they concluded that you can be loaded, you can be really rich, you can grow up amid great privilege and still have very difficult things happen to you.
Yeah, it reminds me of that line, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. And I think mm-hmm. that it's a reminder that even somebody with enormous wealth and privilege, you have a line in there about how he still feels that grief at moments when he should be the happiest, right? Or something along those lines.
Yes, that's exactly what he says.
Yeah. All right. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking with Peter Slevin, who's a contributing writer at The New Yorker. His recent piece is The Billionaire Hotel Heir and Progressive Hero? I'm going to stop saying question mark when I read that headline. If you want to join our conversation today, 800-222-9455. We're talking about Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois and whether he might have national ambitions, how he might approach his national ambitions and whether they might be successful or not, what challenges they'll face. There's a couple of areas of policy I want to get into that he talked a lot about. One of them is climate. He played an active role in getting some energy climate legislation passed in Illinois a couple of years ago. Talk a little bit more about what you heard from people about how Pritzker negotiated that or managed that process.
When Pritzker set out to work on this climate bill that had been very long in the making and very much stalled at times. He assigned his team to do a lot of the negotiating. When you think about the different ways that so many, how many players there were and how many different ways they were pulling, unions, and not even all unions on one side, but unions on different sides, the utilities, and of course, as you know far better than I, Brian, the different policy matters, the different policy interests in and political interests in Springfield. And what I was told by environmentalists was that when push came to shove, Pritzker was willing to make the deal in the end. He was determined to get what he could for money for renewables. He decided to stick with nuclear, which pleased some people, obviously displeased others. And in the end, ended up with a pretty bold deal. But it was complicated, as you know well.
Yeah, yeah. You also talk about, or he talks to you about abortion policy, and you note that he seems very animated by that. I mentioned he started this national dark money pack focused in part on abortion rights. Talk about why that issue seems to drive him so much.
It's really fascinating. He described to me his belief that abortion is now the number one issue in the country, driving voters to the polls and pulling in not just Democrats who support reproductive rights and access to abortion, but also independents and Republicans. One of the things I cover often for the New Yorker is abortion politics. And we all saw, as you remember, last August of 2022, voters in Kansas making sure that voting, that abortion rights were not stripped from the Constitution. Same thing happened in Michigan last year when voters inserted abortion rights in the Constitution. And of course, there's an election coming up, a referendum coming up in Ohio on the 7th. JB talks about going to pro-choice rallies when he was still in elementary school with his mother. And you may remember some of the advertising from his political campaigns that show him as a young man at pro-choice rallies. He sees this as an issue that is fundamental. It's a fundamental right as he sees it. He sees it as an example. He sees anti-abortion policies and arguments, rhetoric, as essentially a violation of human rights, of civil rights, of women's rights. And he believes that, and has believed for years, he has spent millions of dollars, sent millions of dollars from his own pocket to the likes of Emily's List to fight for reproductive rights. And I think with this organization that you mentioned called Think Big America, which, by the way, is a play on his girth, as well as his ideas, that he's got an issue that's going to get him a lot of attention and maybe make some progress around the country.
We got another text from a listener on this. Christina in Rock Falls said, I think Governor Pritzker is doing a great job when so many other states are stripping people of their rights. I see Illinois codifying ours, strengthening protections, and working hard to bring business to our state. I think he'd make a great president, but selfishly, I want to keep him in Illinois. We finally have a good governor after so many years of bad ones. Regardless, if he made the choice to run for a higher office, he would very likely get my vote. Can you just briefly, we need to take a break in a couple minutes. You said you do cover this issue for The New Yorker. Let's talk a little more about abortion. Contrast what's happened in Illinois in terms of abortion rights with what's happened in other states, especially in the Midwest.
Absolutely. Pritzker calls Illinois an abortion oasis. And legislation goes back actually under Rauner. As you know, it was one of the things that cost Rauner votes among Republicans when he did not toe the hard line on abortion politics. When you think about the states that surround Illinois, you see nothing with a little asterisk next to Wisconsin with its new Supreme Court. You see nothing but abortion hardliners who have passed very strict abortion laws in Indiana, in Kentucky, Wisconsin until very, very recently, Iowa, most recently. And Pritzker notes that there are thousands of patients who are coming to Illinois from out of state. The numbers are up extraordinarily since the Dobbs ruling in the summer of 2022. And he is determined to preserve Illinois as a haven, as an oasis for reproductive rights.
And one more text before we go to the break. Karen in Simpson says, after a series of ineffective and or damaging governors, it's been refreshing that Governor Pritzker has actually promoted Illinois as a great place and see things changing for the better in the state, especially in these polarizing times. If you want to share your thoughts on Governor Pritzker and his potential future ambitions for higher office, which he has always demurred on, he says he's supporting President Biden's reelection and basically stops there. But he is, as we said, created this dark money pack. He's been speaking at state Democratic Party events across the country. He's been going on the Sunday political shows. He's clearly working to raise his national profile. If you want to share your thoughts, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. More with Peter Slevin. His article in The New Yorker is The Billionaire, Hotel Heir, and Progressive Hero. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking with Peter Slevin, who's a contributing writer at The New Yorker. His most recent piece about Illinois is called The Billionaire, Hotel Heir, and Progressive Hero. It's about Governor J.B. Pritzker and his apparent, or maybe we should say possible, likely, future national political ambitions. He seems to be attempting to raise his national profile, going on more national political show, speaking at other states to Democratic operatives and party members, the party faithful there, also creating this dark money pack that's aimed at abortion rights and LGBTQ rights. We're, again, talking about this with Peter Slevin. If you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455. All right, Peter, one of the things I wanted to sort of press you on a little bit is you talk about some of Pritzker's accomplishments, and he's sort of structuring himself as this liberal hero who just got all this stuff done. I think at one point you describe Illinois as having grown sclerotic with corruption. And yes, Illinois did face challenges. We had this single-minded Republican governor, Bruce Rauner, who the Republicans grew to hate because, frankly, he was probably more of a Democrat, except on labor union issues, in terms of a lot of his social issue beliefs. And the state was paralyzed because of his sort of single-minded determination to weaken unions like AFSCME and the teachers' unions, which the Democratic majorities in the House and Senate were not going to go along with. But before that, we had a governor, Pat Quinn, who abolished the death penalty here, legalized same-sex marriage through the legislature, which very few states, if any states, had done at that time. They created a compassionate use of marijuana, as they called it, medical marijuana program at the time. Part of me wonders if, what is Pritzker's, what's the term that people into fantasy baseball use, VORP? What is his value over a replacement Democrat taking office in Illinois in 2019, right? Could a bag of leaves with a Democratic Party sticker on it have done just as well as Pritzker in that first year in office?
He was definitely pushing on an open door. I think that's a very good point, that the governors before Pritzker had done well. And even in the Madigan years, remember, there were really strong Democratic majorities.
That's why people liked Madigan around, right? I mean, that until they didn't, they liked him around because he had those big majorities. Yeah.
He had big majorities. He also had particular alliances that sometimes worked, sometimes didn't, depending on which side you were on. And I think any ambitious Democratic governor would have done really well in Illinois. I think what's interesting to me about Pritzker is the way he has defined himself, again, not just in terms of what he's doing in Springfield, but the way he is trying to pitch a Democratic message that goes beyond the cities, beyond the suburbs, and tries to reach reach voters who are disinclined perhaps to vote for Democrats. Those who say he has made a difference in Springfield, that would be, as you say, value over replacement, say that his willingness to collaborate and his willingness to compromise are meaningful, particularly in such polarized times and particularly given recent years in Springfield, and that combination of kind of policy and political ambition and a certain fundamental decency may be working.
I wonder if he's ever really been challenged in a general election. I mean, he had two, frankly, very easy opponents. As you mentioned, Republicans had really turned on Governor Bruce Rauner. He barely won the primary, and he wouldn't even say President Trump's name for a long time. So, when Rauner was elected in 2014, it was still Mitt Romney's Republican Party. Then you have the Golden Escalator, and he's toast after that point. And then we had Darren Bailey so that was Pritzker's first campaign in 2018. Against a very unpopular governor. And then we have Darren Bailey in 2022, who one political scientist told me looked like he'd stepped off the set of Howdy Doody, which was maybe not so appealing to where the most voters are in Illinois, which is in Chicagoland. So has Pritzker really been tested, do you think, in a general election?
I think he has not been tested. I think you're exactly right. He did have one race before this one. It was in 1998 when he lived in Evanston, and he ran for the seat in Congress that was won by Jan Schakowsky. He spent a lot of money, $500,000. He got 14,000 votes, and he finished third. When he decided to run in 2017 to run in the 2018 election, he could see that Rauner had been significantly weakened. And so his challenge was to figure out how he would win the Democratic primary. And at first, you may remember Chris Kennedy, son of Robert Kennedy and Chicago businessman, was in the race.
Also president of the U of I Board of Trustees, our home station at the time. Yes.
There you go. He was in the race and he was known, and Pritzker was not known. And Pritzker told me a funny story about how he had held a focus group with kind of random voters to see what they might think about the various candidates. He said he watched from behind a two-way mirror as 9 of the 10 voters in that room said, "Yeah, yep, Chris Kennedy, that's good. He's our man." So he did have to face a challenge. He did have to beat back a challenge from Kennedy. He spent an enormous amount of money to do it. And then, of course, he ran against Dan Biss, who's now the mayor of Evanston, and Biss ran to his left. You're absolutely right. He has not been tested, though, in Illinois. And if he does indeed have presidential ambitions, he's going to have to figure out how to compete when the spotlight is very much on.
Yeah. And he basically used his money. You mentioned how much money he spent to win that primary. He also actually helped engineer Darren mm-hmm. Bailey's, arguably, I guess this could be disputed, but, Darren Bailey's victory in the Republican primary, because he thought that would be his best shot at an opponent.
Very much so. And he poured all that money into the, into Democratic, into the campaign against Richard Irvin.
That's right.
Because Irvin was seen as someone who would have a better shot against Pritzker.
Yeah. So let's talk about Pritzker's theory of the case, right? He becomes this liberal hero. People, want to compare him to, John and Elgin said this in a text message. "I'm pretty left-wing voter. I was not excited to vote for a billionaire who seemed to be buying up the party's support. But he is one of the most effective politicians in the country, actually accomplishing most of his goals. I hope he runs for president and does not change his positions. He could be the next FDR. Talk about that, because, it strikes me that it wasn't too long ago that somebody who is, that wealthy could be described as obscenely wealthy. And, we're a party that claims to have income inequality as a core value and, fighting privilege as a core value. It's not a natural fit, right, that they would go with this ultra billionaire who has spent tons of his own money to win office. Talk about that dichotomy.
I think that is one of the most intriguing things, Brian. Like, so many people like John and Elgin saw Pritzker as the Democratic rich guy running against the Republican rich guy. And I've been struck while working on this story, which I've been chipping away at now for a year, when I've talked with progressive voters in Chicago, of course, we just went through the city election in Chicago, where Brandon Johnson was elected. And so while I was on the campaign trail, I would sometimes writing about that, I would sometimes ask about Pritzker. And all of these progressive voters said, boy, I never thought I would like this guy. And yet I do. In fact, I have a college-age son, and I told him I was working on this piece. And he said, will you please explain to me why all my progressive friends want to vote for J.B. Pritzker? So something is, in fact, working. And who knows what the how voters now interpret great wealth. I mean, remember, who knows, of course, how much money Donald Trump actually has. But remember when he ran, one of his pitches was that he was this fabulously successful businessman. Now, whether he really was one or just played one on TV is not clear. But if you can combine wealth with sort of policy chops and kind of this ability, again, going back to his youth, to get along with people, to talk with people, to have people believe that he's listening to them, he might be able to go, you know, a ways, because he's not Michael Bloomberg, remember, who jumped into the last campaign, absolutely loaded billionaire from New York, but didn't have the personality, the policy chops, the experience to make it work.
We got another text. This is from Jake in Southern Illinois that I think embodies some of the issues that Pritzker could face. And I'll just say, as a preface to reading Jake's message, that you know, Pritzker likes to talk about Illinois being the most demographically representative state in the U.S. in terms of, you know, Latino population, Black population, immigrant versus non-immigrant. But, you know, I look at the statewide numbers. Democrats do very well, but there are parts of downstate where Pritzker is loathed, right? You see it. I know yard signs don't vote, but people have yard signs that say Pritzker sucks. Pardon my language. You know, and I wonder how much more of those, you know, yard signs will be in play if he's trying to win electoral college votes. And this brings us to Jake, who says, Governor Pritzker's done a number of good things for Illinois, but I don't think he'd have a foothold on the national level. He's still very corrupt. Have we all forgotten him taking the toilets out of his mansion to get lower taxes? Springfield hasn't shown signs of improvement since he came into office either. State departments getting evicted from their buildings due to a lack of basic maintenance. Let's funnel all our money to Chicago and leave the rest of the state in the shadows. End quote. Now, I can say that is not actually factually accurate. It's been well documented that downstate, Southern Illinois, actually gets more money back from the state than it pays in taxes. Chicago, I think, is about even, and the suburbs are net contributors and get less money back if you look at the state as those three regions. But that's a lot of me talking. Peter, what do you think about this idea that, yes, Pritzker is a liberal hero, but, you know, maybe a liberal hero, but that maybe that doesn't really play across the aisle and in the general election? You can just, you know, I don't know, ask President Sanders, President Warren, President Howard Dean, President Adlai Stevenson III of Illinois, or the second of Illinois.
Well, this is one of the great debates, one of the great points of discussion. And I think Pritzker anticipates this as well. He doesn't position himself as far to the left as Bernie Sanders, for sure. And he also focuses on something that does seem to matter among independent voters and some Republican voters, and that is a certain fiscal responsibility, balancing the budget, credit ratings going up. So he's trying to show that he's not a tax and spend Democrat. And I think facing facts, it's important to note, I mean, J.B. Pritzker lost 89 of Illinois' 102 counties last time around. Joe Biden lost five times as many counties to Donald Trump as he won. So I don't think Pritzker would be under any illusion that he is going to suddenly ride into Darren Bailey's district and triumph. I think he's trying to peel voters away in those kinds of places, but he is really focused on the suburbs and the exurbs, as Democrats across the country are, because that's where the votes are. You know, as Willie Sutton said, why do you rob banks? Well, because that's where the money is. I think Pritzker is focused on winning over, especially women, with his policies on banning assault weapons, speaking up for abortion rights, and still hopes to gain dramatically there, not counting on big victories downstate in rural counties, which are much smaller, of course.
Yeah. All right, one more text as we get to the end of our time together. Kyle in Iowa said, having recently moved to Iowa, I'm already missing Pritzker's leadership and the policies he championed. He led the state through many challenges and did it with compassion and foresight. I would probably vote for him if he ran for president. He'd probably be a better POTUS than other blue state governors like Gavin Newsom. But that also depends on who else is running against him. So Peter, what do we know about that at this point? Pritzker is certainly not the only governor with presidential aspirations. What obstacles, what people would he be up against?
It becomes such a crapshoot, doesn't it, running for president? I mean, look how many candidates there were in 2016 in the Republican primary. Look how many there are now. And who scrambles to the top of the barrel? You know, the crabs in a basket, crabs in a barrel is never easily predictable. Pritzker is banking on running somewhat to the left from the Midwest, keeping in mind, too, that the Democratic National Convention will be here arguing that these policies are not crazy left, that these are sensible policies that will translate elsewhere. And who will he be up against? Well, you know, your guess is as good as mine. Obviously, Newsom has shown some interest. Gretchen Whitmer is in the wings from Michigan. Pete Buttigieg ran once. We could go down a very, very long list. One thing Pritzker has going for him that is distinctive is he has hundreds of millions of dollars. He's already spent more than $300 million just in these two elections. And I did not ask him about this, but one might imagine that he's prepared to spend deeply to make himself competitive.
Just 2 minutes left in our conversation. It's interesting, given everything that's been happening in Israel in the past few weeks, that his Judaism, and I know deadlines are such that maybe that, I'm sure your piece was probably closed before the Hamas started invading Israel and killing civilians, and Israel was retaliating and bombing Gaza. But I wonder if just briefly, if you can speak about that, because if he were to be elected, he would be the first Jewish president. Is that something he thinks about?
It is something he thinks about. He asked himself in deciding whether to run in 2018, whether Illinois voters would vote for a wealthy Jewish businessman from Chicago. One day when I was talking with him, he mentioned that there have been, I think he said that he is actually the fourth Jewish governor of Illinois. It's something he thinks about. He's in touch with a couple of other Jewish governors around the country. And I think it's been interesting how he has played, and I don't mean that in a crass sense, how he has, what he has said since the Hamas attack on October 7th. He has said that that Illinois, that he stands with Israel, though he was careful to say he stands with the IDF in its offensive against Hamas. He did not say against Palestinians. And then just yesterday, he did an event with Arab Americans saying that there has been too much hate against not only Jews, but Arab Americans as well, and that hate has no home here, the line he likes to use. He said, we stand here united across religions, across ethnicities to renounce hatred.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Peter Slevin, I don't think this will be our last conversation on this topic on the show. Thank you so much for being with us today on The 21st Show.
Glad to be a part of it.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.